Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 28, recorded Thursday, January 5th, 2006. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler, more about the journey than the destination. Today's topics, the controversy of carry-on, what did I forget this time, and classic travel stories. Put your head between your knees. This week, coming to you once again from the Oldsmar, Florida Courtyard Hotel outside of Tampa, Florida. I decided to leave rainy and damp Chicago for sunny Florida for a couple of days of business. Came down yesterday morning. I decided not to head down Tuesday and the first day back to work. Thought about it, but decided I'd let the remnants of sort of Christmas, New Year's traffic clear out. And then, sort of as one last Christmas present to myself, I decided not to take my usual 6:40 a.m. United flight down, but instead slept in, said good morning to the wife and kids one last time, and then caught the 9:20 American flight down. There'll be more than enough time this year to catch early morning flights. You know, I start off the year on a sleepy note. I was surprised, though, at the crowds at O'Hare Wednesday morning. I had missed the business rush hour, but the place was just packed with leisure travelers, a combination of sort of, I guess, straggling holiday travelers and snowbirds heading south for the winter. Makes for a very different vibe in the plane. On my flight to Boston the Monday morning before Christmas, everyone in the exit row had their laptops open and their Bose noise-canceling headsets on. Today, everybody was doing either Sudoku or reading People magazine. You know, following up a couple items, I was catching up on some back episodes of the IT Conversations podcast and came across a really funny riff on airline seatback emergency cards. It was by Z. Frank from the PopTech conference earlier this fall. And I'll tell you, as a frequent exit row occupant, I've become well acquainted with these cards to the point of having them read to me occasionally by an overzealous flight attendant. It's the first 15 minutes of the podcast, and it is really worth a listen. It's pretty good. He's a pretty funny guy. I'll put a link in the show notes. Hey, I hope everybody enjoyed last week's Best of 2005 episode. I'll tell you, I was surprised that it took as much or maybe even more time to assemble that retrospective as it does to create a new show. Not as much time writing and thinking, perhaps, but the time searching and listening and editing more than made up for it. It was fun, though. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you did, too. Spelunking through those past episodes made me realize that I haven't had much to say about the TSA lately, the Transportation Security Administration, which is because things seem to be going pretty well. I mean, back in Travel Commons number 11 and then again in number 18, I mentioned that I was noticing sort of a bit of sanity in the TSA screeners. I hadn't taken my shoes off for 2 weeks. However, I've noticed a bit of backsliding. I noticed this on my trip before Christmas. Screeners at O'Hare and at Providence found fault with the same pair of shoes that hundreds of their fellow screeners had let pass. You know, sort of perhaps in retaliation for these looser carry-on regulations, you know, given that they're no longer able to save travelers from their nail clippers, they're stepping up their vigilance on lethal loafers. What strikes me, though, is how quickly these sort of vigilance screeners throw their brethren under the bus. I asked the O'Hare and the Providence screeners the same question. Are you saying that the 100 other screeners who let these shoes pass were wrong? Without a pause, without a beat, the answer was the same. I'm the only one doing the job right. You know, I tell you, you gotta love that loyalty to your fellow, to your fellow screener. I'll tell you, I think the only thin blue line for these guys is the flight attendants queuing up for pat downs. Definitely our tax dollars at work. First topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, the controversy of carry-on. I traded notes prior to Christmas with Leo Vigoda, a Travel Commons listener who lives in Amsterdam, about the topic of carry-on luggage, and more specifically, the inconsistencies of carry-on rules across airlines. Leo writes, "One thing I'd like to hear your thoughts on is the problems of finding a bag that can be used as carry-on with lots of airlines. I'm based in Amsterdam, which is KLM's home base. KLM is now owned by Air France, and Air France often seems to compete against KLM, offering cheaper flights via De Gaulle and Paris than the direct KLM flights from Amsterdam. You know, this is fine, but Air France's carry-on allowance is 8 kilograms, that's 17.6 pounds for the metrically challenged U.S. listeners, while KLM's is 10 kilograms, or 22 pounds. I found a chart on the web showing a list of 30 airlines and their allowances. There were 9 different maximum weights and a number of different maximum dimensions. I'll post Leo's link that he sent me in the show notes. Now, I'll tell you, there are a few things in airline travel more controversial than carry-on luggage. Airlines, as a rule, hate carry-on luggage. It slows up boarding, which costs them money. I mean, think about it. They make money when the planes are flying, not when they're parked. And it inevitably puts their frontline employees, gate agents, and flight attendants in conflict situation with their customers. Not a best practice for building loyalty with any of those groups. However, efforts to rein in carry-ons have just almost uniformly met with failure. United's experiment with baggage sizer templates on the front of X-ray screening machines was a complete bust. Non-compliance was rampant. And the bagger sizer boxes that were used even earlier than that now sort of sit off to the corner at each gate, unused except for when they're mistaken as a trash bin. But you know, finding a place to store your carry-on is the ultimate quest for all frequent travelers, because by that, you avoid that 30-plus minute wait at the baggage carousel or the 1-plus hour tail-chasing exercise if your luggage is lost. One of the most treasured perks of the premium status flyers, you know, sort of the precious metal levels, gold or platinum on programs like American's Advantage or Northwest's World Perks, you know, the most treasured perk is pre-boarding, and it's not because, you know, we're all tired of standing. Following up on Leo's comments, there seems to be a split on how U.S. and European airlines govern carry-on. The European airlines seem to be focused on limiting weight. You know, most of these airlines seem to limit carry-ons to less than 25 pounds. The U.S. airlines are really more focused on size. Will it fit in the overhead bin? You know, American Airlines' weight limit is 40 pounds, and Southwest doesn't even list one. You know, since there's no scales at the gate, you're only really limited by how much you can lift 6 feet in the air, or sort of by your ability to guilt other passengers to do it for you. And since most of my travel is in the U.S., my selection of carry-on bags, to get to Leo's question, I focus completely on size. Being able to fit my bag into the bin, wheels first, doubles my probability of finding overhead space. Indeed, I recently switched from a taller Atlantic bag to kind of a shorter but fatter Swiss Army bag, because it just more efficiently uses the space. It's about 6 inches shorter, so it fits in wheels first, and when it's in there, it's just a little bit taller, which is fine, because I never have a problem fitting the height into the bins, only sort of the length, being able to get in wheels first. So it's really got about the same amount of space in cubic inches, but it fits into the bin wheel first rather than sideways. And because I don't care about weight, I also go for a rolling bag. I mean, you look around and you read all these websites, and everybody's saying, oh, no, don't go for rolling bags because it adds weight. All the wheels and the handle all adds weight. I don't care about weight because nobody's weighing my carry-on bag. And I'll tell you, it's really nice to be able to sit my laptop case on top of my bag when I'm rolling down to the far reaches of, you know, Terminal H in O'Hare or some, you know, random terminal in Denver, or if I've got the really long schlep at San Francisco. However, I will tell you, I do suggest limiting yourself to just one rolling bag. Those folks with a rolling carry-on and a rolling laptop case look like they're taking their luggage for a walk down the terminal. Almost as important as size and wheels, the carry-on bag should be black. Now, look, you walk into a luggage store and you're going to see some red and some bright blue bags. But I'll tell you, walk through an airport at 7 a.m. in the morning. That's business rush hour. That's when the pros are flying. And it's wave after wave of black rolling bags. Perhaps it's because the original rolling bags used by flight attendants were black. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of practical reasons. You know, black doesn't show the scuffs from heavy use. But most important, it doesn't stand out. A black bag doesn't catch the eye. And perhaps, you know, sort of like with clothes, maybe black has a slimming effect on luggage, making it a slight bit easier to slip an overstuffed bag past the eyes of a gate agent. Second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, what did I forget this time? You know, I'll tell you, I've just had a really hard time getting back in the travel groove this week. I guess it just doesn't take long to revert. You know, 2 weeks off the road and a week of sleeping in late, and my travel reflexes have turned to mush. Or maybe it's that I just sort of got out of the rhythm. Rather than doing, I had to think about everything. And 2 weeks off the road, I had actually unpacked everything. Nothing was left in my suitcase, and my toiletry kit was actually in the bathroom. And there was my fatal mistake. I had run out of some of my home toiletries, and rather than making a Target run, which I really hate, I used some of my travel toiletries instead. And so in my laziness, I violated a cardinal rule of frequent travel. Never take your toiletry kit out of your suitcase. You know where this story is going. Wednesday morning, I must have walked back into the house 3 times for things I forgot. My mobile phone, my iPod, my BlackBerry. However, it wasn't until I was in the parking deck at O'Hare, wheeling my carry-on toward the elevator, that I realized I left my toiletry kit in my bathroom. Damn! And a few stronger words that I would prefer not to use in this podcast because sometimes my kids listen to it. You know, there wasn't enough time to head home, and so I just sort of forged ahead, knowing that it was just going to screw up my entire day. Most frequent travelers travel on a packed schedule. You're just trying to get the most out of the hours that you're out of town. And in my case, you know, I flew into Tampa, grab a cab to the job site, work to the evening, get a ride back to the airport. It's a pretty limited, constrained set of destinations. And now having to borrow a car and get directions to a Walmart or a CVS, it just throws me out of the rhythm even further. And then buying this stuff. You know, first of all, remembering everything you have to buy. You know, once you've stocked a toiletry kit on sort of day one, you typically don't do a bulk replenishment. You only buy the one thing that you need. And so it's easy to remember. However, in my case, I had to remember everything I needed, which in my post-holiday fog was not easy. So I ended up basically reenacting my bathroom routine in the middle of the CVS pharmacy, hunting down the needed toiletry as it came to mind. Luckily, it was a fairly abandoned store at 6 p.m. last night. And the last topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, in this edition of Classic Travel Stories, assume the position, put your head between your knees. Driving to Chicago's Midway Airport last month, I drove through the intersection where the Southwest flight had crashed through a retaining fence, crushed 2 cars waiting at a traffic light, killing one boy from Indiana. And I could see the temporary chain link fencing covering the hole left by the jet. You know, some of the preliminary findings suggest that there were mechanical difficulties, trouble in getting the engine's reverse thrusters to deploy, which significantly reduced the plane's braking ability on what was already a slick runway with a 10-mile-an-hour tailwind on a very short runway. You know, I got talking about airline mechanical difficulties with my father, who, you know, in his time was a very frequent traveler, and we ended up talking about it on our drive back from skiing in Breckenridge last month. My dad told me a story about taking a flight from Memphis to Moline, Illinois, one of the Quad Cities on the Illinois-Iowa border, for those of you not from the Midwest. He ended up having to connect through St. Louis, and on the second leg, he was sitting in the back of a DC-9, seated right next to one of the engines. The plane had rotated up and was climbing out of St. Louis Airport when my dad felt a huge thud. The woman sitting next to him grabbed his legs, her knuckles just turning white. Looking out the window, he could still see the engine, but when he felt the plane bank around, he knew something was wrong. The pilot banked the plane right around and landed it right back down on the same runway he had just taken off from. Stepping out onto the tarmac from the stairway, my dad looked back at the plane. The tail was black, and looking at the engine he had been sitting next to, there was nothing left. There was nothing left of the engine but the housing, and he could see straight through it to the runway behind him. It had obviously been some sort of bird strike that they'd picked up on rotation out. The woman who had been sitting next to him followed his gaze, saw the damage, and just started screaming at the top of her lungs. My dad looked at her and said, "Ma'am, you've made it safely to the ground. Don't make a fool of yourself now." You know, I told my dad about the time when, on approach, the pilot aborted the landing and pulled up. And you can sort of feel that when they're coming down and all of a sudden they push the throttle in and boom, they climb up pretty briskly. It's annoying, but not really an overly rare event. You know, maybe a plane on the ground hadn't cleared the runway quick enough. Yeah, no big deal. But then the captain came on the speaker. "We're not getting a down and locked indicator on our gear, so I'm going to fly around the tower and have them take a look." Now this deal has suddenly gotten a little bigger. 5 minutes later, captain comes on again. "The tower says the gear looks okay, but we still don't have our indicator lit. So we'll be down in a couple of minutes." Okay, we'll be down, but he didn't say exactly how. About 30 seconds later, I hear the click in the intercom. Up comes the captain again. "I'm going to ask the flight attendants to instruct everyone on how to assume the crash position, just in case." So now, on a final approach that absolutely seems to take forever, the entire plane has its head between its knees. The touchdown, I will tell you, was one of the smoothest I've ever experienced. First, the back gear. Then, the nose gear. Still, complete silence. Then, we felt the plane's weight sort of settle onto the gear. Still silence. 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds go by. We've now convinced ourselves it's going to hold. There was a simultaneous exhale of held breath, a huge cheer, and a round of applause. We made it. We were down on the ground safe, and we could all deplane with our carry-ons. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 28. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. I'll tell you, I better get my travel rhythm back because I'm back in full travel swing next week. Probably a day trip, day and a half trip down to Memphis, and then off to Las Vegas the back end of the week. But at least I've got a freshly stocked toiletry kit. Hey, remember, your travel stories, your travel experiences, the voice of the traveler, are at the core of Travel Commons. Send them along to comments@travelcommons.com or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks for all the feedback. And hey, thanks to the folks who have already filled out the listener survey. I've mentioned that on a couple of podcasts now. And if you haven't, I'd appreciate it if you'd drop by the website when you get a chance and just sort of run through that survey. The link is on the left-hand bar. Again, I'd really appreciate it. Well, thanks again for listening. And I hope you guys have a good weekend. And until we talk again, take care. Bye now.